food, radical love, and creative social justice. So today's show is with three fabulous New Haven folks that I'm really excited to talk to. And I welcomed each of you here because I really care about story and hearing about people's stories in their own words. And so thank you for joining me in studio today. This is a live show. And so let's go down the line and I'll let you introduce yourself. So Miss Genesis Vicente, can you tell people who you are? What do you do in life and food?
Hi, so my name is Genesis Vicente and I'm Guatemalan. I'm 24 years old. And I work with Lathan Austin on food system work in New Haven. So I'm the food system administrator in New Haven right now.
Awesome. Great.
I'm Latha Swami. I'm the new director of food system policy for the city of New Haven. I've been here about 4.5 years. And I'm originally from Georgia and I'm Indian American. And I work with these two lovely people on food system work in New Haven.
Awesome.
Hey. I'm Austin Brynjarski. I'm a New Haven resident. I've been here for 6 years now. And I get to hang out with these guys as a member of the New Haven Food Policy Council. And I'm also a student at the Yale School of Forestry.
Excellent. So as I said, I really care about story and kind of hearing people's stories and perspectives in their own words. And I thought that we could maybe start with something personal about food memories. And I'm curious if each of you could share something about an earliest food memory that is important to you. Does anybody want to start?
Yeah, yes, goes.
Go ahead, Latha.
One thing that I was thinking about recently is that I'm Indian American. My parents are from India, specifically South India. And one thing that I really associate with childhood and maybe, you know, when I get sick, you know, the kind of that comforting feeling is actually being fed by your parents, but fed by hand. So culturally, you know, we in Indian culture eat a lot of our food by hand. So we don't use utensils. And I actually was kind of missing that recently. And it was kind of reminding me about my, you know, being sick and, you know, like being like, Mom, feed me by hand. It like feels so much better when you feed me by hand. And I thought that was kind of it was a sweet memory that came into my mind recently.
That's really sweet. Yeah. Austin, did you have a story you wanted to share?
Oh, I just said nose goes because I didn't want to go first.
Oh, okay. All right, then we'll pass it back to Genesis.
So for me, what I remember the most is, so I'm originally from New York. I grew up in Long Island. My parents were undocumented for a long time, and we lived in Glencove, New York. So I remember being a child and my mom always cooking breakfast, making like chorizo and huevos, frijoles, tortillas. And then like growing up, she started going to beauty school. And so she started off cleaning houses and then realized that her passion was doing hair. So she went back to beauty school. And during that time frame, she would work, go to school in the morning and at night, so like we wouldn't see her. So at that period of time was when like she started cooking for us less, but that's where my tia stepped in. So that was my dad's sister, and she cooks amazing, and to this day like she still cooks for me when I go home to New York. So I just remember like the two of them, my mom and my tia, really just cooking for us all the time. And even to this day, like sometimes I'll be at home in my apartment and I'm like, I'm craving frijoles right now. Like I need frijoles, I need tortillas. Like that's what I grew up on.
Yeah. What kind of frijoles did they make?
Frijoles negros, so black beans.
And what was special about them? Like, did they have a really strong certain flavor of certain spices or garlic or onion?
Growing up, they were actually not my favorite thing to eat. And it wasn't until I went to college that I was like, wow, like I truly miss black beans.
Did they ever teach you how to make them?
I cheat. I don't make them from scratch. So no, I don't really make them, but I do want to learn how to make them by myself.
Nice.
But yeah, they have like that garlic and that oniony taste.
Yeah. Nice.
I'm getting hungry.
And Austin, you know, before you start, just in the just thinking about racial justice work. So like, two folks here who are brown just introduce themselves as their cultural background, and we didn't hear your cultural background. So, yeah. In the name of like unwhitening whiteness, like, yeah. What's your cultural background?
I'm a white person.
Yeah, we did this last night.
Yeah,
but,
we did.
But you're not. I mean, what culture within whiteness?
Polish American.
Okay.
I grew up outside of Chicago, which is actually one of the, I think it's the second largest, community of Polish people outside of Warsaw in the world. So even more than like most Polish towns.
Yeah.
And thinking about like food memories that are super germane to my childhood, I think of my grandparents making pierogi and sauerkraut and gomkwi, cabbage rolls, things like that, that are super warm and super like carb heavy and super sour. And my grandpa, he passed away last year, so he's really coming up a lot as I think about embarking home for the holidays. But he was like pickling before it was sexy, right? Or he was like canning sauerkraut before, hipsters found it. It's a lot of like those kinds of foods that are super resonant, beets and sour cream and Lefa and I, as she said, were talking last night, and we were talking about how like New Britain has this amazing Polish community that I have not at all interacted with. But it's something we should, I think it's time for a day trip to get some pierogi.
That's awesome. I think a lot also about the importance of connecting with ancestral foods as like part of undoing racism work, just like connecting with who we are and what our identity is. And I think also very important, I mean, for all peoples, but also as white people, like not just being a group of white people, but realizing like, oh, we have cultures and differences. And so food, and I love like fermenting and pickling is such an amazing thing, because cultures across the whole world ferment and pickle, and thinking like, this isn't just like a hipster thing. This is actually your ancestral food wisdom and,
completely.
And skills. So that's really awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I think my grandparents were born in the US too. So there's like, more generations of distance from like thinking about myself as Polish or Polish American. Yeah. And I remember growing up, like there were a lot of my classmates, their parents had like immigrated to the US like in
generation.
Yeah, and they were first generation. So I remember going to school and thinking like, oh, I'm not like Polish enough or like I don't know the language. And I think that's super important in these conversations about racial justice. How do we like what do we lose when we like take on the identity of whiteness, and how do we get that back?
Yeah absolutely. So I'll share a food memory too, which is always hard, except for some reason I have an incredibly clear memory of my childhood. So there's like 1,000 people are like, how do you remember all those things? But one of my earliest food memories is that my mom, so I grew up in New Haven, and I'm first generation here. My mom she worked in the public schools in other surrounding towns, but she used to bake out of our house and deliver desserts to a local restaurant that used to be called Annie's Firehouse. And so she used to bake these amazing things in our house. And one time she made these meringues that were like gigantic, like, a huge pile, the kind of meringue that you dry in the oven. And so it was, you'd turn the oven on and make these meringues out of egg whites and sugar, and then you'd put them in the oven and then turn the oven off. And so they'd dry out overnight.
Wow.
And I have this really clear memory from this apartment that we lived in of her pulling this tray out of the oven, and they just looked like these white sugary clouds, and I really wanted to eat them, and I'm not sure if I got to eat them or not. But it's just this really clear memory of that moment of her pulling them out, and they just seemed like magic. Like meringue just seemed, to take an egg white and turn it into meringue just seemed like magic. And that was one of the first things that I ever learned to cook as a kid. So we had like a mixer, and I just used to sit there. You have to add the sugar really slow so that it dissolves into the egg whites. And so that was like my job as a kid, to like to make meringue, and we would make them for Passover because has no flour in it. So it was, that became my childhood baking job. So that's one of my earliest memories. So I guess we just all shared some things about interest in food, but we all work in food. And Lathal, why don't we start with you? Like what has kind of inspired you or guided you into working in food? And I know that's not all you work in, but the food part, but also the other components of your work, like health and environmental work and things that are related. Can you share about what led you into doing the work that you're doing in life?
Mm-hmm. I guess centrally, I kind of view food as a perfect nexus between health and environment, and kind of my educational trajectory is I went to medical school actually when I was 18.
Wow.
I went to college when I was 14. And so I came to New York for a medical school program. It was a joint degree with a PhD as well. And I was focusing on neuroscience. And so during my time in medical school for about 5 years, I was seeing patients, and I was kind of becoming more aware. I always had an interest in the environment, but I was becoming a little bit more aware about how the environment was affecting my patients' health. And so I decided to move into health policy and do this fellowship advocating for universal health care in the United States. And during that work, I was realizing that actually I can get even more macro. And, you know, the environment really is kind of a root cause for a lot of health issues, and specifically looking at food and kind of the health and environmental aspects of food. And I entered the farm school program at Just Food NYC, mm-hmm. Which is amazing. I love that program. I love Just Food. So it's an urban ag certificate program. And that, while I was in that program, is when I applied to the Yale School of Forestry. So I'm an alum from the forestry school as well. So educationally, I've had this trajectory from like med school to forestry school, but always had this kind of food and ag grounding me as the thing, kind of like guiding me, right, to these different things. And I think it's just fits well with this idea of planetary health, and, you know, it connects with culture. And that's kind of what guided me. Food kind of guided me with my professional trajectory into this work. And I was working globally a lot, but I recently moved into this like municipal level work, and it's very interesting to see how this local food system connects to the global food system, and then trying to work on like centering justice in municipal level work that actually translates to this global level work with all of the great people that are working on it in New Haven.
Can you explain for people who don't really know what we're talking about, like with some of the things you just said, can you give an example of like how a local thing would connect with a global thing in terms of food work or food systems or environmental work?
Let's see. What would be a good example? I don't know if anybody else has a example off the top of their head. You were just in a course really that was talking about a lot of this, right?
Yeah. I just submitted this paper yesterday that went into it a little. I mean, sort of just thinking about like addressing issues of like hunger or food insecurity from a perspective of justice rather than from a perspective of like charity, and the way that like particular movements around food or movements around the right, like thinking about food as a human right, these very like global sort of framings, like how do you operationalize them at the local level, or how do you bring the way that folks are talking about you know, ways to address the root causes, for example, of what creates a community to experience hunger in very like concrete local ways.
Yeah, I think, you know, it you know, what I see a lot happening in on the local context is, you know, it feels good to kind of provide a meal for someone, but when you think about the root causes, you know, that's kind of like what drove me in looking at things in a more macro level. I loved seeing patients one-on-one, but I realized that in order to actually affect like population health or kind of move systems, you need to work on a larger like policy level or systemic level and target the root cause. So it feels good to feed someone directly. But when you think about the global food system, you know, you're thinking about how, you know, food is kind of moving across borders and how trade policy affects that, how that affects, you know, like worker rights and immigrant justice and, you know, these things are all connected to literally providing food to someone and kind of thinking bigger picture.
Yeah. And also, why does that person need food? Right. So like, what has happened to our global economy that people don't have livable wages? Right. And it's not just poverty. It's also racism, because like there are intentional policies that have kept people, brown and black peoples, impoverished. Right. But it's not just about money and class. It's about their race and not allowing them to benefit from social programs and other things. And so I think it's so important to have these conversations about system change, because it's really hard, I think, for the average person to understand how to make that jump from like, someone in front of me is hungry and I want to help them. Of course, like, we all want to help people. And but then how to make that jump to that we're not, that it's not effective to just keep putting Band-Aids on everything, that we actually need to figure out how to change the system so that people aren't hungry, so that people have a livable wage, that people have food that nourishes them, not kills them. Right. So like that understanding both of those things and how to work on those is so important.
And I think one example that Genesis and I have talked about at work is, you know, looking at food and place and understanding, you know, a lot of people ask me about food deserts and, you know, moving away from the term food deserts to food apartheid, because it's a purposeful thing that happened that created kind of areas that have restricted access to food, any food or fresh food. And we know that that's redlining. So looking at kind of not just, you know, thinking about systems, but also looking back, right, at history and how this was established in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you like to tell a little, maybe jump on to that and then tell us about, like, how did you get where you are in life right
now? So we've been working on a lot of cool stuff. We've been kind of working on some breastfeeding advocacy throughout the city, and also like school food stuff, which really interests me. So I got into food because of my tia and my mom. Growing up, seeing them cook, it made me really like and enjoy cooking. So I went to culinary school. I went to Johnson Wells University in Providence, Rhode Island. And I, you know, did culinary there. But then while I was studying, I realized the importance of culinary nutrition. So I actually changed my concentration from my bachelor's to culinary nutrition. And I did an internship in New Orleans with the Gold Ring Center for Culinary Medicine. And that really, like, I loved my internship. I was able to basically teach community members cooking classes for free. And we would teach them basic cooking skills, you know, like how to hold a knife, how to cut an onion. And we had, like, we had students, medical students come into the teaching kitchen. We had, like, VA that was there. It was really a diverse group. We had families, children, and just working with the community there really impacted me. And I was actually talking to Latha about this the other day. I was coming from New Orleans. I was like, I want to do this work, you know, back in New York, back in Connecticut. And so I had an idea that I wanted to move to Connecticut after college. And so, you know, working now in the food system of New Haven, it's kind of like come full circle, where I was in New Orleans and I was like thinking about this work and I wanted to be in this type of work. And then now here I am, like, 3 years later doing the work. So it's really, I think it's important that we're, you know, addressing these issues here in New Haven and trying to, like Latha was mentioning, you know, this is all connected. Everything is connected, and it's also like at a global, you know, thinking about it you know, in a macro perspective, it's like global work too. So I don't know. I think it's really important, and food is life.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So just for our listeners, you're listening to WNHH 103.5 FM in New Haven. We're streaming live at thenewhavenindependent.org, and you can also check us out on thetableunderground.com. So I want to ask you, Genesis, a follow-up question to that. We're in studio today with three fabulous folks who work on food and life, community building, the environment, food justice, all kinds of good stuff. And I'm curious because we were just talking about kind of working on a systems level, and you're also talking about working on a one-on-one individual level with food education, nutrition education.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about why you feel that's important and also how you feel that kind of work can be effective?
Yeah. So I think especially I have an interest in like educating younger kids. And I think that that's really important. You know, you have to teach them when they're young. So I think that like there's a lot of education that needs to happen. I know like growing up, I mentioned like I remember eating chorizo like basically every weekend, and chorizo is not good to eat, you know? And like after a few years, my mom like realized, okay, that's not really something that we should be eating every weekend or, you know, too often because it's not good for your health. So I think it's really important to just like educate our communities, especially our communities of color. I think a lot of work has been done in nutrition, but like, I feel like people just tell them, you know, go eat quinoa and go eat like kale. And I don't know, for communities of color, that's just not it. So you need to think deeper and think of like things that are culturally like appropriate for our peoples of color. And so I think that that's really important. And I'm really passionate about doing that. You know, my interest in food.
Yeah.
So I actually also did a, I worked for New Haven Farms over the summer, and I was able to develop like recipes for the kids with the youth farm-based wellness program. And so that this past summer was amazing to just like be with the kids and like, you know, show them this is how you grow a tomato plant, you know, and this is how we can eat tomatoes and kind of like just make it in a way that they're, you know, more susceptible to trying new foods. And also like genuinely enjoying them. At first, they were kind of skeptical and were like, I don't know if I want to eat that. But by the end of it, most of them were more like willing to try new things. So I think that's super important. And that's more of like on the one-to-one, like really like, you know, personal level of just teaching them from when they're young.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing, so I've done, I also was a chef. I didn't actually go to culinary school. I just learned cooking, but I also started out doing a lot of nutrition education work exactly in the way that you're talking about, like trying to really connect with people where they're at and what the foods are that they're used to, and then start there as like, how can they work on making it better? And can you share some specific things around how you, in doing nutrition education, take people's culture and food preferences and ways of eating into account when you're also trying to help them eat in life-giving ways?
Yeah, so I just try to keep in mind, I'm, you know, I'm Guatemalan. I don't know everything about every culture. So I really just do like my research and try to see like, what are some of their typical foods that they eat every day? And like common foods for them. And I try to use like similar, you know, use the ingredients or use like similar flavor profiles. So like over the summer, I also try to like introduce the kids to like new things. So one of the things that I made with them was a play on like spring rolls. So I got like rice paper and we filled it with like cucumbers and like mango and carrots, and we try to like just show them, you know, they've never been exposed to this type of food before, so it was really awesome. And they were like having fun with the rice paper and like this is so sticky, it feels weird, but you know, they're kids, they had fun with it. And I think that, you know, those baby steps in the long run, hopefully they'll like impact their lives. So I really just do my research and try to see like, okay, like what are some typical foods from different parts of the world, and how can we try and like make something healthy using those same flavor profiles?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you too, that like getting kids to try new things is so important. And so whatever that looks like, because sometimes I find that parents impose on the kids like, oh, no, they don't like that. But like kids
exactly.
don't know that yet. So like
exactly.
you don't have to tell them that. Just let them try.
Yeah.
Stop
yeah.
projecting.
Yeah. One thing that this is reminding me a lot, and also Genesis and I talk about this kind of stuff all the time.
That's
we,
awesome.
We like fall into these rabbit holes about sharing about each of our food cultures.
Yeah.
So I've learned a lot. but one thing that I am... that comes up is that, you know, you mentioned that there's some stuff that you didn't like when you were younger, but then when you get older, you know, it's something that you, for example, I was traveling a lot for work and school, And I realized that I just crave Indian food whenever I'm anywhere. And I don't feel fulfilled until I have Indian food. Because even though I might have resisted when I was younger, this is what I actually crave. And so recently, I was actually talking to Austin about this. I had gone to a nutritionist, wanted to see what recommendations they had. And but they were unable to, I told them what kind of foods that I eat, what kind of things, because specifically I'm South Indian. So we have kind of, and I'm vegetarian, I'm specifically lacto-vegetarian. So I've never eaten meat. So I have, you know, a certain diet that I kind of stick to. And it was kind of hard, you know, the nutritionist was recommending certain things that aren't part of my food culture and palate, and it became ineffective, right? I wasn't able to kind of incorporate any of their suggestions into the way that I eat.
Mm. And when you told them what your diet was, were they able to give you other suggestions, or they really didn't get it?
I think they're trying to, but they just really didn't have the knowledge. And I don't think they really had access to any tools that would help them kind of be able to create something that they could, you know, it was just very American base. I mean, but what does that mean anyway?
Right.
But, you know, like it was not part of my food culture. There was very little variety. And,
yeah.
You know, it was like, eat this pasta with this, you know, with like, you know, tomatoes and kale. And,
yeah,
and that's
exactly
what you should eat.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you all talk about your food cultures a lot. What does that look like? Are you sharing recipes or just?
We sit there and we share different dishes and we describe them and then we Google them so we can show each other what they look like. And it's just, you know, there's just one thing that I always talk about that's a staple for me, and it's very South Indian. It's called Thayir Sadam, which is the name in Tamil, which is a South Indian language, and it's yogurt rice or curd rice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I eat. It's like plain yogurt mixed with rice. And that's, you know, I don't actually eat plain rice. I prefer yogurt rice to eat with whatever vegetable I make or even we talk about, you know, the term curry is actually very meaningless to Indians. And curry actually refers to, you know, hundreds of different varieties of a mix of spices. But, you know, people will come up to me like, do you like curry?
Oh,
it's like,
gosh.
Well, which one?
Natha actually introduced me to Tikaway. So the three of us will occasionally go out on
We've
lunch
been
breaks.
Known to, yeah.
To go to lunch breaks at the local restaurant, Tikaway.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome. So Austin, what got you on this path into food and social justice work?
Yeah, it's long and winding, but I mean, I think growing up, my parents were really interested in cooking and food. And so having that around in the house was like a super big deal. Like we would spend Saturday mornings watching the Food Network and sort of gushing over Ina Garten and then sort of raising our eyebrow at the show Semi Homemade with Sandra Lee, if anyone's familiar. And then also in middle school, I had what I like to call my Al Gore phase. And I'm not sure how many middle schoolers have an Al Gore phase, but I was like reading An Inconvenient Truth, and like climate change was this big, scary thing, you know, even 12 years ago, that like, you know, really sort of motivated me to become interested in environmental issues and the ways that I think food seemed like this very tangible thing to sort of address these very sort of invisible and global problems. That turned into this, like, you know, individualized response to big, giant, scary problem of like, oh, going to the farmer's market with mom was like a way to address this. And, you know, thinking more about the role that the food system plays in in climate change. But when I was in high school, I went to Growing Power in Milwaukee, which under the leadership of Will Allen, was really bringing these conversations about systemic racism and food apartheid, although I think food desert was still sort of the lingo of the day, to this sort of this power analysis to food systems, which was like, okay, this is like, this is it. This is like the silver bullet, and this is what I want to study. And so I came to Yale to do just that. And it also, I think, thinking about like the shortcomings of, you know, supporting your local farmers market in addressing issues of race and class and climate, really gave me pause to think like, oh, like, am I part of the problem? And what do I do so that I am at least conscious of that, or can do work in a way that is that makes space for other people? And because I think like what Genesis and Latha have been raising about nutrition as being this very like prescriptive or controlling or top down or sort of inconsiderate sort of way of addressing a problem is like part and parcel with the history of how food policy has been done in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about how food policy can instead be like an act of making space and building community. I think that's what drew me to the New Haven Food Policy Council specifically. And that's sort of the role that I see it playing in fostering like these very conversations and actions based on those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that piece is so important about and is a connection between kind of the top, like the big level, the macro systems level, and the individual kind of grassroots one-on-one level of things, is that food policy, as you're saying, like the importance of it actually being informed by and guided by what the actual problems are on the ground. Mm-hmm. And getting information about like what would be effective solutions that first of all actually care about the most of the people, right? Not just the people making money. Yeah. And that are actually like open to having kind of that input into the policy making process. And that is what we were trying to do in the New Haven Food Policy Council. And so I appreciate you bringing that up. And, you know, it's interesting, like I've known you for a few years, and you, unlike most people who come to Yale, have been really integrated into the city of New Haven and also really conscious of power dynamics and your role as a white man, but also as a gay man, and also as just someone coming from Yale into the city. And I would love to know just kind of what helped you to kind of have the approach to working in community and working on these issues that you do that's really different than kind of the average person who comes in.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, what made you realize that like you needed to be aware of how to leave space for other people or kind of be humble in the way you're working? Or
I think it's a bunch of different things. I think I was a senior at Yale College when a lot of the conversations around race on campus and racism on campus were like huge.
So this is when the window was smashed. Is it that? Was happening?
I think that was like the summer after.
Okay.
But in the fall of 2015, a group of organizers on campus, mostly queer women of color, expressed all of these demands and articulated all of the ways in which like Yale was this very hostile space. And to hear that and not necessarily have noticed it for the 4 years I was on campus was like a holy, I don't know if I can swear, but
like a wake up call.
Yeah, it was a wake up. It was like, what, I'm doing something wrong, or something is not right, that I had very little understanding of what was going on or how people were feeling in a space that like I had felt relatively comfortable in. And like that, I think, was the impetus for me to be like, okay, I need to like I need to read things and I need to talk to people and I need to like get with the program because so I like owe a lot of the work I do and a lot of the way I approach my work to like the unpaid and often unrecognized labor of my classmates who were like losing sleep for months of the fall of 2015 to bring the change that they wanted to see to campus. And yeah, I had a newspaper column at the time, and to think that I had like this platform that I was using like to write pretty like, you know, like nonsensical or like inconsequential thing, like it just all came to a T in this really wonderful way. And I decided to stay in New Haven. I worked for 2 years at the Yale Sustainable Food Program, shout out, and like really used that as an opportunity to like continue to explore, like not explore, that's such a colonizing way to say it, but to like consider like how I could like think about these things in relation to food and agriculture and like what my role in bringing about that same change that my classmates had wanted to see could be in the world. And that so, also meant like having the flexibility to get more involved in New Haven and think about things that way. And I think like also as like a queer person, like knowing in a similar way, right? Like knowing that like what affords me the ability to like not be harassed by police or to exist in public space in a way that like I feel very comfortable, like I owe that to like the labor of like trans women of color like throwing bricks at Stonewall and like literally dying for that ability that I have. And to think that that like particularly gay white men today like aren't like, you know, building community with people of color or like paying that forward, and instead we're like think like so much political energy was put into like our right to get married rather than, you know, securing healthcare for trans people, like very basic needs, like is just like is shocking. And I think that it's like that kind of considering my own position and wondering how to use that power responsibly. That's a lot of what gets me going.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks for making the space.
Yeah. I could ask you 1,000 more questions, but before this show is over, I want to hear a little bit about each of you has these different orientations to this work in food and community and politics and, you know, all these different issues, environmental issues. I would love to hear a little from each of you about your vision for kind of what you'd like to see change. And that could be like on a really local level, on a much larger scale level. Just what are some of the things that you're focused on or ways that you want to see change happen?
Go ahead. I think for me, it would be because I have like, you know, this background in culinary nutrition and I'm really passionate about like, you know, educating and nutrition education. I think for me, it would be I envision not just New Haven, but I would envision a world where like all people, you know, people of color have the same like opportunities to really grow themselves, you know, financially so that we don't have problems like food insecurity, like Lothar was mentioning. And it's not just about like, you know, leading them to a food pantry or soup kitchen, but honestly, so that people don't have to resort to those things, that people would be able to have the opportunities that a same, you know, a white male has to financially better themselves, but also a community that's healthy and they've been informed of like ways that they can live a healthier lifestyle, not just through nutrition, but like, you know, enjoying the outside. And I think I was able to really delve into that with my work in New Haven Farms. Just being outside, just go outside, enjoy our community and really just live a healthy lifestyle and live happy, and, you know, be able to succeed, whether that not just financially, but, you know, have like a good like mental health, like go outside. It helps you. It makes you feel better about yourself. Like just go outside and enjoy the world. I just don't want to see people suffering. I think that it's really sad that New Haven specifically has a high rate of food insecurity. Like I don't want to see that. I don't think that that should be a thing in the world. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I feel like people could hear what you're saying and be like, oh, that's such like a la la land. Like, yeah, everybody. But so this is the thing, though, because I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, what if the people in our government and people on a global level actually made decisions and policies and laws that were based on the framing that we want all people to have what they need to thrive and survive?
Yeah.
Right. Like, which is what you're saying, but it's like if you take it onto that level, like our laws, like deregulation of all things is about letting corporations whose goal is to make money decide how laws and practices and policies should happen, right? But if our government was making laws based on all people, regardless of their class, around their race, around their gender, their sexual identity, anything, were able to have healthcare and food and housing and education and jobs and clean air to breathe and all those things, like that is the goal, right? So it's not like a la la land thing. It's like our legislators
I also think that people need to be like more informed and want to be informed, because I feel like I used to be that person, and I know a lot of people that like don't really like look into these things or think about these things, and it's just so important. Like you can't just live your life and, you know, go to work. And I used to be that person that would like go to work, go home, go sleep. That's it. You know, you need to like really just be aware of your surroundings and be knowledgeable of what's happening in your community. And, you know, I'm so thankful that I've met, you know, everyone in this room, because they've taught me and they've like just shown me a lot. And I think that people just need to be informed. They need to have that like will to learn what's happening in their world. Like we're living in this world. Like don't just be caught up in your bubble of work, you know. Like I think it's super important for the community to be informed and really want to work towards a better future for everyone.
Yeah. Would you like to share?
Yeah. So thinking, I totally agree, and kind of just thinking with the you know policy in mind, because that's kind of, you know, the work that I'll be tackling. I think it's really important to think of things as you can create an enabling environment for all these things if you work on the policy, just like you said, Tegan. And it needs to be informed by grassroots work and and things that have already been percolating in New Haven for a very long time. So I think that kind of focusing on these enablers is something that I'd like to see happen. For example, you know, this strong focus on kind of food pantries and emergency food assistance, very important, one component of the food system. There are many things that we could be working on. And I think that, you know, if we, you know, also kind of look at the links to capitalism and, you know, how some of these things are actually, you know, in a way, you know, these large corporations want food insecurity to continue because, for example, Kraft, 1/6 of their sales is from is through SNAP. And, you know, if you actually like move people out of food insecurity, where are those sales going to go for them for, you know, their profits? So kind of connecting some of these local everyday things to the larger policy environment and actually working toward enabling moving away from that, I think that's kind of, you know, like the policy focus of what I'd like to see happen.
Yeah. Can you share in practice? Because, I mean, as you're saying, like, we don't want anyone in our city to be going hungry. So it's not like we're saying, like, don't feed people in food pantries.
Yeah.
But on this larger level of how to address, like, all the other food issues about, like, why we have the circumstances we do, is there, like, a thing that you feel most passionate about that you feel like at a city level that we could have an impact on?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's some things that we're just starting to get work, starting work on. One thing is kind of developing institutional partnerships. So, you know, these are, you know, huge institutions that have a big buying power within the city. And I think if we focus on that, for example, focus on trying to buy more locally and regionally, you know, staying within Connecticut, working with distributors that are local, you're actually bringing back kind of jobs and economic security back into New Haven. And this is, you know, one kind of inroad to try to strengthen this food ecosystem in New Haven. And one of the first institutional partnerships that we're going to that we've been working on is with New Haven Public Schools. So that's one exciting thing. And then, you know, with Genesis mentioned some of the breastfeeding and like first food work that we're starting on. That's exciting that someone actually came to us, you know, after reading the food action plan, which you helped develop.
Yes.
So, you know, they said, you know, we're looking for resources. We saw the strategy in the food action plan. What's going on with that? And I'm like, this is the perfect time to be working on it. So we're looking at breastfeeding resources, lactation support around New Haven, and what kind of policies can be created to actually support strengthening that in New Haven, because first food is, you know, the most important. It sets you up for the rest of your life. So
yeah, that's great. Well, I look forward to hearing more from you too, as you've only been working at this a couple months, and
yes,
so
yeah.
And I know there's been work going on here for years that I had previously been super engaged in, but I'm excited now that you bring like these other skills and also this kind of global work that you've done. We didn't even talk about, but the more global work that you've done, and to hear kind of the insights that you start to have about what we can do more effectively in our city. So
yes.
I look forward to future conversations.
Only 2.5 months in, so I have lots of things
awesome.
That are coming.
Great. And Austin, just, you know, you've been working with the Food Policy Council for a couple of years now, and doing various projects. Can you share, just, we just have a minute left. Can you share kind of what you're hoping, what you think would be effective for some next steps with work in New Haven?
Specifically, I think there's been a lot of interest with the role of like labor in food systems, and thinking about how like centering protecting workers specifically has the benefits of addressing issues of food insecurity, because food systems workers among all of the ways they experience oppression, whether that be like because they are undocumented, or because they don't speak English, or because they are gender nonconforming, or women, and experience like sexual violence in the workplace that goes unreported. Like that is a really, they like centering them in our work can really see a lot of promise, and also like in a structural way address food insecurity in maybe a way that like more charity-based approaches to addressing food insecurity cannot. And then in terms of like what we want to see in the future, like like I think we have to think a lot about planned obsolescence, and like
what does that mean?
That means like we need to like work ourselves out of the work we do, especially when it comes to like the nonprofit organizations who are doing work around health or around food or around you know, any kind of these systems. Like if we actually want to bring about a world in which the problems we're claiming to solve are fixed, then like we wouldn't need those organizations to continue to fix them in the first place. So how can we do our work in a way that like sort of plans for that or accounts for that in like a very beautiful way?
Yeah.
I also think we need to see Yale taxed. The future I want to see is one in which we have a civilian review board with power and one in which Nelson Pinos is not living in the basement of a church.
Yes. Yeah. So if you're local and you don't know what Austin was just talking about, look up those two things and get involved, because we need both of those things to happen. And the Civilian Review Board is also coming up, I think, very soon for review again with the Board of Alders. So definitely get involved. So thank you all so much for joining me today. And if you have any recipes you want to share, or links to organizations, or things you think people should read, why don't you send them to me, and we'll put them up on thetableunderground.com so people can find them. And we'll share links to, so people can learn more about each of you and the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're listening to WNHH 103.5 FM in New Haven, This is The Table Underground, and I'm your host, Tegan Engel. Thanks for listening.